So my name is Carrie, for those I haven't met. Hi, nice to see you. It's been a long time. Okay. So for those I haven't met, I'm one of the guiding teachers here. And those who were here yesterday will have heard this, but the purpose of these groups, I don't like the word interview, but the purpose of the practice meetings, these groups during a retreat is a little bit Q&A. So if there are questions around the instructions that seem unclear, this is a good time to get some clarity and dialogue around that. But also it's just a time for people to share what they've been observing, what you've been noticing as you've been sitting so far. And it's really beneficial for, sorry about this, it's really beneficial for other people to hear what other people have been noticing and experiencing. It's really helpful. It's one of the main benefits of being together in Sangha, is to be able to, oh, this is what I've been noticing. And to also hear oneself articulate or explain what you've been noticing. So this is a really valuable part of the retreat. There's no forced march around it. Don't feel like you need to share your deepest anything. It's really just a chance to check in and have a little dialogue about what you've been noticing so far, if there are any questions or challenges you've been having. So, and I'm aware of people online too. Hello, haven't forgotten you. Nina and Dragon Yogi. Hi, Susan. Nice to see you. Oh, and there's a hand. Jonathan from the ground reclining practice. Good. And Devorah. Hi, everybody. Okay, so we're experimenting with the hybrid groups this weekend. So love it. Whoever would like to start. And hi, Jessica. maybe a little bit about what you've been noticing so far or any questions. We're just kind of getting started this morning. So any questions about the instructions? Yeah, Michelle.
Good morning. I've been reflecting from yesterday's discussion, and I think today's also, about kind of separating out the Vedana, the sensations, the bubbles, and the clinging and aversion. So the things that we talked about yesterday about the second foundation with the pleasing, unpleasing, or displeasing, and neutral. And then the next part about the clinging, aversion, and boredom, I guess. But also like figuring out where Sankara come up with all of that. I think it's the last part. The reaction. And I've been, it was interesting to hear Tuari talk yesterday about her son's reaction to peas and how it's just like innate. He's not doing anything to not like the peas. Aversion itself is, there's nothing wrong with it. But also then understanding how to stay calm with that. And it doesn't mean we don't do anything. You can go ahead and spit out the pee. This is something that's coming up a lot in my life. And so around something that I have realized recently that I'm averse to, that I had taken on a societal mental tag that everybody loves it, so I must love it too. And realizing that I don't, and that I can have boundaries around that and protect myself. And it's okay that it's not the same as how everybody else is. And so not judging that. And the conversation this morning about Pima children, like a giving space for that and staying calm with it, I guess was really helpful. I welcome any thoughts. Mm-hmm.
Michelle. Yeah. So I talked about this a little bit in one of the groups yesterday, but with the four foundations, they really are like four frames of reference, Right? So it's helpful with this particular map to kind of lay them out one by one, focus first on the body, and shine the light of awareness on feeling tone. And this morning we're doing thoughts and emotions, and we'll move on. It's helpful so we can just get a sense of them distinctly, but really they're all happening together all the time. Right? They're all happening all the time. We may have a whole aversive mood going on in the background, and that's affecting everything. So it's helpful to get a sense of things distinctly, but they all are happening all at once. But where it might be helpful to focus is that link between not liking and aversion, right? So there's a middle step in there between not liking the pea and being irate that somebody served me peas, you know? So that link, a lot of what brings us into a full-blown state is our thinking around it. So it takes a bit of space and stillness to be able to see this is unpleasant, and it's about like disidentifying from that movement to the point of being, and that's what gives this sense of space, is that ability to step back and say, this is unpleasant, this isn't pleasing to me in this moment. And then the tricky part is to stay steady with that actually kind of means, and I'm also willing to explore letting go of the story that I tell about myself in that place, right? So you don't have to make thoughts stop, but you can experiment and play. I think about it as full stop practice. Can I just let this be unpleasant for a moment without telling the story about it? So if it's already underway, then you have a different investigation process if it's already kind of going forward. But this instruction this morning is to do the same kind of thing with our thinking. So we step back, what kind of thinking is happening? Yeah, and that gives a little bit of space around it. That means we're not completely in the content of the thought. If we're sitting here and all of a sudden we've got a thought about our son or our brother or our coworker, all of a sudden we're merged with that thought and we're in the world that that thought has created. So we're just trying to get a sense of what is the mind doing? And is there a little space to step back and notice instead of kind of create the world? So I'm not just talking to you, I'm just talking generally. So this labeling is a really important part of kind of getting space. And the Buddha recommended, you know, no contracted mind as a contracted mind. Know an uncontracted mind as an uncontracted mind. Yeah. So know a worried mind as a worried mind. Know an unworried mind as an unworried mind. So to know the fluctuations of our thoughts and mind states is a big part of the third foundation. So it's kind of stepping out of the characters and the story and how am I going to, it doesn't mean we don't act or don't respond, but it changes our perspective to do that. Does that speak to it a little bit? Okay. Thank you. Thanks for bringing that up. Okay. Maybe I'll just ask anybody online. Have any questions or your own observations? Yeah, Dragon Yogi. Is that a good name for you? Okay, unmuting. All right. Okay.
Okay. Now I'm unmuted.
Yes, gotcha.
Full of gratitude and appreciation. Practicing how to self-identify, how to not identify with thoughts. not me, not mine, not myself, impermanent. I'm not the Nietzsche, let the wisdom roll. And some practices maybe that we can do to work with that.
Great. Yeah, I think you're on the right track. Just don't flag it too early. And sometimes there can be a little bit of aversion in there. Oh, this is impermanent. This will pass. We can flag it a little too early. This will change. This is, it has a little bit of a standoffish quality to it. Right. So we can catch that. It's different. There's almost like an interested kind of expectancy. Like, wow, I wonder what thought is going to happen next. Yeah. We don't know what it's going to be. This is a place where we're not in control. What is going to happen next? So we're kind of trying to get a sense of what is this mind up to? Yeah. What's it up to? And
we can practice with thoughts too, right? The fact that the mind is a wandering mind, or the thoughts are coming and going, being aware of that, isn't that also a good practice?
Yes.
As well?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so that's what Tuari was pointing to in terms of the labeling. That allows us to get a little bit closer and really know what's happening. No wandering as wandering. There will be plenty of times where we kind of half know it, kind of have a sense of what my mind is up to, that like more or less mindful kind of a thing. But to really recognize, really see, okay, this is what's happening now. Yeah, this is what the mind is doing now. That not so we can condemn it or judge it or fix it or solve it, but that's how wisdom, that kind of discerning wisdom, really starts to become embodied and lived moment by moment. So we're not trying to apply something from the top down. It's like we're getting it in the moment, in the flesh. This is what's happening. So it's good. It's good. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Question. Gratitude.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Hi, Nina. And then I see Jessica as well. Great.
Hi. I have kind of a confession to make. For years, I don't know why, I just had an aversion to labeling. And during this morning's practice, I started doing labeling when my thinking came, and it was like, and the thoughts would disappear. It was like, oh, okay, that's labeling. That's this. And then it would go away, and I'd come back to my body. And so I could see now how I wasted a lot of time, but now I know that, labeling does help me recognize that my thoughts are nothing.
That's right. That's right. And thank you for mentioning that. And you're not alone in that aversion to labeling. And with every technique, there are times when it's medicine and there are times when it might be poison. So it kind of depends on how we use it. Like I said, it's pretty easy for the labeling to become, you can just watch for this, for it to become aversive. That's why I really like Tuari saying it can be a whisper. The label can be just a whisper of recognition. It shouldn't have a tone of disgruntledness to it. So it can be a whisper, and you can always watch for when the label kind of takes on a life of its own. Sometimes people get very busy trying to find the right label. You know, is this remembering or rehearsing or is it judging or planning? You know, anything can be taken too far. So just kind of watch how you're using it. And then, you know, really the heart of wisdom is discerning. Like Tori mentioned that sutta of the two thoughts. What's helpful? What's not helpful? So that's kind of the direction we're heading, is to first get a sense of how thinking moves, what the mind is up to, and then we'll be able, because most of our thoughts are extremely repetitive. Maybe you've noticed. Yes. They're often not going in new and helpful directions. They're often very circular and repetitive. So we'll be able to tell with more and more discernment what's helpful, what's not helpful, what we need to pick up and pursue, and when we don't need to follow and pursue. So, but it starts by just making these distinctions between, I have my own label lately is emailing. I'm actually emailing in my mind. not helpful, really not helpful. So just a sense of humor really goes a long way. Little bit of space and lightness around it. Wow, look at this mind. Look at this mind. It's incredible. So thank you for confessing, Nina. Very helpful. Yeah. Okay, Jessica.
Hi, thanks. I guess the question is, you know, I have some decent sense of certain types of patterns of thinking, you know, sort of self-loathing, you know, they're like mailing or ruminating about an argument, those kinds of defending kind of things. I also have this sort of like other kind of like line of thinking that kind of comes up, I would say, out of story or something like that, but they are connected, and it's almost like an actual felt sense, like these things will come up. Maybe I had reacted to them without more mindfulness in the past. And so I have this connection that's really a memory where I was really frightened or something. So it'll be referenced and I'll get really frightened, a very embodied sense of it. So it gets this very congealing, like, it's me, like, it really is me. And so I'm just sort of like, you know, how to maybe work with pulling that apart a little bit, because it is so embodied. It's sort of hard to like pull it off. So I'm just wondering what you think about that.
Yeah, great. And that's a really good description of how thoughts and emotions get very entwined and entangled, right? So in that case where clearly like there's a strong emotion and it's kind of taken over. And so at that point, I think it's really helpful to come into the bodily sense, since it's so strong anyway, and stay with the sensations as much as possible that are happening. And you can even very gently, compassionately, with a lot of understanding, you can know what emotion is present. Yeah, like, oh, this is fear or hurt, you know, or frustration or anger. But the key part of pulling that apart is, like Tori was saying this morning, it's not that I am a fearful person. It's not that this is a referendum on my character, right? This is a moment of fear moving through the body, the heart, and the mind, and it feels like this. I feel twittery, I feel agitated, you know, kind of in a swirl, whatever it might be, you know, clenched hands. So we kind of stay there and accompany ourselves moment by moment, but knowing what's happening. This is a moment of agitation. This is an agitated human mind moment. No, but it is not a referendum on me. It is not a character flaw, right? That's where it just gets excruciating, right? Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that. Okay, maybe one more. Jonathan, hi. Were you here yesterday, Jonathan?
Yes.
Oh, great. Nice to see you.
Thanks. My question is more regarding one of the teachings yesterday by Donna. I find it really hard to, I understand the whole concept of something I practice myself in terms of experiencing something and categorizing as either pleasing or displeasing, instead of just taking it at face value as is, right? Without having to go through that process. But I would find it really hard in terms of making connections with other humans, right? Because there is a disconnect between like your own practice and like the outside world. We are tribalistic in nature. We like to have the share the same thoughts. It's like we experience something displeasing from someone. That guy's a dick. Yeah, that guy's a dick. High five, you know? But like when you do it in that practice, probably that connection will be a lot harder because my thought will be like, that is, that just is, right? And how would you say you navigate that discrepancy between, you know, your own practice and being that way while also not sacrificing that connection with someone else, which it's already difficult as it is.
Yeah, that's great to pull that in. And I would actually propose that this can be so helpful and transformative in relationships. It's harder to bring it into relationships because our reactions are so quick and our judgments about ourselves and other people are so quick, right? The story arises almost immediately. But the idea of practicing in this way is that it's slightly easier. So we start where it's a little bit easier so we can get a sense of how things unfold and operate. But when we get with somebody and we can stay connected and attuned to the flow of unpleasant sensations in our own bodies and minds, say, then we actually free the other person from our projections based on that unpleasantness. Right, so it actually allows for a greater mutuality and a greater connection, right? Because we've kind of taken responsibility for our own internal mind around it, right? It doesn't mean that we retreat to a corner and don't interact, mm-hmm. but it means I know what's going on in my own mind. I know it doesn't actually have to do with that person. Right, this person may have unintentionally provoked it, but it's actually happening in me. So it actually frees up a lot of space to choose and respond differently, rather than out of the same kind of habit stream. Yeah. So we don't conclude about who another person is based on a fleeting feeling that's going through our system at the moment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge freedom. It's not easy, but we practice here where it's hopefully a little bit easier to see the territory.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. But that's the direction. Yeah. One of my early teachers would say, you know, start with the itch or the bug bite or the irritation on the cushion, the physical irritation, and then we'll move on to dictators and, you know, the most irritating person. But start small. Yeah.
Thank you.
So thank you, Jonathan. And thanks, everybody. Appreciate your questions, comments.